Thank you. Sally Rock and Roll.
Wonderful.
Welcome back. It is episode. Shut up, Mick. This is our podcast. What would the Mick Jagger podcast sound like? It's a Melnick and Murphy podcast from CNS Studios in Western NDG.
West Side.
Mitch Melnick, Shane Murphy, and we play that classic Stones recorded at the Beacon Theater 2006 for our very special guest this afternoon. Stepped up to the on-deck circle to pinch hit for the immortal Howard Billerman of Hotel 2 Tango Studios, who does promise to be putting in an appearance at some point real soon when he comes back from Banff, where all the hoity-toity music types meet every year in Banff. There's a big music conference.
Wasn't he cattle rustling in the rodeo in Banff?
I think he's kosher.
I said cattle rustling.
You're still allowed to rustle cows.
Well, you can't even touch. No, you can't even touch cows. Huh?
What do you mean you can't touch cows?
Can I introduce cow kosher,
it's pork and shellfish. First of all, you're being bossy and shellfish. I think you
see what I'm not kosher.
See what I did there?
Maybe just let him talk. Just let him talk and see how long it takes. Because when we post this, we won't say who it is.
Oh, is that how it's going to work?
Yeah, so maybe people will be able to figure it out.
Not only am I what the French call a bouche trou.
What is a bouche trou?
Nobody's going to even know who I am the entire podcast.
Really?
Well, that's good, because then I can speak candidly.
Everybody already knows.
Right, a bouche trou is what they call a bouche trou. So if you have a trou and you bouche it, it's like a filler. A filler, you know? It's like putty.
No, you're
you
not a
you stick putty
filler
in the wall.
You're
when
like the little boy
leak
in the dike.
Exactly.
Stuck your finger in the dike.
Polyfilla. Remember that? Do they still sell that?
They do.
I was looking for Bromo Seltzer last week. Do you remember Bromo Seltzer? What are you laughing? It's too early to be laughing here.
Nothing. I'm sorry.
Polyphila?
Polyphila.
I'm sorry. It's going to be one of those.
I just got to keep my brain. I gotta make sure the filter's tight because I don't want us to get any angry letters. Paulie, you remember Paulie?
Well, you've already got one coming from Mick, that's for sure.
Mitch is getting one from Mick, not me.
And he's wearing a Stones shirt, too. That's the irony.
I wanted to welcome formally Bilal Butt of Shome.
Dancehall style.
One of the songs Bilal Butt and the Soul Revivers covered on the night they opened up for
you just
Tommy
say formally?
Upstate. What?
Formally?
No. Or formally welcome.
Formally?
Like,
oh, my God.
Not formerly.
I was like, you fucking left Shome. No, I didn't hear that. Formerly. Formally. I would formally. I thought you said formally. Sorry.
No, there was no second R in there. I don't think there was a second R.
We're backtracking here, guys.
Yeah, we are. You know what the best part of the night was?
Shame's
introductions. Come on.
That's true. That was the best part of the night. Are we still? It's 2019 and we're still stroking Shane Murphy in this
city? No, because he's being sarcastic. Because he says to me, I'm half cut. I'm having a good time. I don't have to play. I'm enjoying the music. I'm enjoying. There's only two bands on the bill, which for me is like unheard of with a Mitch Melnick Renshi production. Okay. There's only two bands. I'm like, what could possibly go wrong? So I'm half cut. I'm a little gassed. And he goes, go introduce the bands. You're going to introduce the bands tonight. I don't want to. And I was like, what are you talking about? You said you had like phlebitis or bursitis or something.
Phlebitis.
I don't even know what phlebitis is.
Phlebitis, I think, is in the leg. It's an old person's.
Well, you were like grunting and moaning and you were feeling, you just didn't feel like doing it. Why didn't you feel like doing it? Anyways, he's making fun of me because my intros were terrible.
Well, without further ado, it was like, it's a very borscht belt kind of thing.
What is a borscht belt? The borscht belt?
What's you never heard of the borscht belt?
No.
We're back to the kosher part of the podcast. Are you sorry you're here?
Not at all.
Like the Catskills?
Yes. Probably one of the best episodes I've ever heard.
Jackie Mason. Am I an ant? Am I an odd buck?
Yeah. I don't want you to think you're merely filler because we've done these podcasts, just the two of us, most of them. But I kind of like the
becoming,
idea. I'm kind of tired of
it's
just
becoming acrimonious and contentious between us. So.
I was just joking. I don't.
You're like the kid trying to save the marriage. You know what I mean?
I don't feel bad for myself at all.
But Bilal and the Soul Revivers, you blasted through how many covers and one original? And I had people, there were people there who certainly know you, but they weren't aware, especially if they weren't at the Soul Southern Soul Show when you covered Skynyrd.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were, but there are people who aren't aware that you are a musician and the manner in which you ripped through the Stones and Joe Cocker and Van Morrison. People were like, holy shit, since when does Bilal play with backup singers in a horn section?
There's a new sheriff in town.
Yeah, that was the first time with the backup singers in the horn section, but I've been playing for a long time, since high school. Grew up in Chattahy, went to Howard S. Billings, and before that, Mary Gardner Elementary School. And so it was in, actually never, not from a musical family whatsoever, except for my mom's side, her brothers, I learned later in life, had a band when they were in high school and liked to play music, but it was like the news on the radio and on the TV 24 hours a day at our house, so... There was no record player. There was no music.
So how did you come to it?
That's a long story you're going to require a podcast for.
And a waiver.
Oh, here we are.
And a non-disclosure
episode
agreement.
21. By the way, let me once again thank, because we're not doing this without Lorne Rubin of Paramount Financial Services, somebody who will take good care of your money. We're at crunch time for that time of the year. And there are a couple of commercials running that I find very effective. I don't even know the company, but it's the couple or the individual meeting with the financial advisor telling them they're going to pull their money out because they never hear from them. And they say, you can't do that. Your whole family's been with us for years. Well, if that registers with you, then Lorne is the guy to call at 514-905-0885, 514-905-0885, Lorne Rubin, Paramount Financial Services. He's a great guy. He loves his music. He loves his comedy. He's very easy to talk to. He's a mensch. And we thank him for supporting this podcast. But back to the non-musical upbringing of Bilal Butt here in Chattahoochee.
He's immensely important to this podcast.
Don't fail to mention it. So I have a question for you, Bilal, if I might, without any further ado. So a non-musical house sounds a lot like mine. Did you get a guitar?
Well, hold on a minute. I'm sorry. But you,
so then
you,
I can't. So then I can't ask the question then.
No, you will. But you said a non-musical house like mine, but you have spoken repeatedly about Johnny Cash and Elvis.
And I've spoken repeatedly that and I knew you were going to check me as I was saying it, so I already prepared my retort, is that my dad had, I've said repeatedly, listened to Elvis and Johnny Cash. He wasn't playing Buju Banton's greatest hits.
No, but it's not like they weren't listening to any music. This sounds like
I'll rephrase.
No music.
So my house wasn't immensely musical. So did you get a guitar first? And my second part of my question is, did it make your parents nervous once they detected that you had the bug for music?
Oh, hell yeah. And first instrument I got, it was a guitar that belonged to my mom, actually. And it was in her closet forever, since I remember first being a little kid and rummaging through my parents' closet when they weren't around. And I found this acoustic guitar buried at the back of a classical guitar, actually. Still have it. And I didn't touch it for a long time, though. I wasn't interested. I was more into sports when I was younger. And then in high school, I had some friends. For whatever reason, I used to just burst out into song in class. I would just start singing random stuff. And I think at the time it was the Disney movie Aladdin had just come out. And that Whole New World song, for whatever reason, I started singing it with this other girl in class who sang the Jasmine part. And then everyone was like, holy you could sing? And I was like, I had only previously done it in the shower, but I guess. Can anybody? And I was just like, no, not like that. And so that week, some friends, classmates came up to me and were like, hey, man, like, we're trying to put together a band for the talent show at school. We're missing a singer. Will you sing with us? I'm more into sports. I'm not really into singing. They're like, especially in a band. I was like, I've never done that before. Like, just come to one rehearsal. Come to practice. We'll just mess around, see how you like it. And, just do this one show if you can so we can play in front of our friends and our family and all that. And if you want to quit after, you can quit. I was like, okay, fine. Let's try it out, see what it is. And nervous as hell for the rehearsal, learning the songs. We did, I think, 3 songs. And then right up until showtime, we were at school in the auditorium. All your classmates are out there. This was grade 9, I think. And I was shaking. I thought I was going to pass out right before the curtains opened.
It's the best feeling.
It's horrible when you're going through it the first time. I imagine kind of like acid, never done that, but I'm waiting for the day where I get stupid enough to try it.
Late in life with all the memories can come flooding back.
So it was like the most nerve-wracking thing, and I thought I was going to pass out and not be able to get through this or nothing would come out of my voice. And then the second the curtains parted and I saw the crowd, it's just like a calmness washed over me. And I was like, this is where I'm supposed to be, and this is what I'm supposed to do right now. And then I kind of felt later like not only right now, but I want to keep doing this. So from then on, I've been singing in bands, and then I finally, went, hey, Mom, can I grab that guitar you had buried in the closet? And she's like, yeah, sure, I'm not doing anything with it. So she thought it was a phase, I was going to tinker around with it, and that's the end of it. But I got some strings. I right away started writing songs. There was only 2 strings on this guitar, the 2 low strings, and I was doing like a dun 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 dun. Okay, I take my notebook and I write down string 1, fret 3, and then go to string 2, fret 7, dun 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 dun, and I write lyrics to it.
That's Louis Louis you're doing.
I wrote something like, I don't know, 5-6 songs, and then a friend of mine comes over, or I went to his house with this guitar, and he's like, dude, you need 6 strings on your guitar. He strings the guitar,
me. No, I don't. AC/DC doesn't need that.
But the thing is, these 2 strings weren't in tune.
Right.
Initially. So all the songs I wrote had just gone out the door, because now that I'm trying to play dun, 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 like, you know, the first string, third fret, and second string, seventh fret doesn't make the same noise it did before.
The coordinates don't match up anymore.
No.
Yeah.
So I lost all my original songs. All six of them, damn it. They were the best songs I ever wrote because it was real. It was in the moment.
So why did your mother put her guitar away in the closet? Like,
well, she didn't, I don't know. Well, it was actually in the closet with her Elvis records, too, because we didn't have a record player. And I just guess we never got one. She's like, and I even found the records once. I was like, what are these? She's like, oh, there's some old records. I used to listen to those when I was younger.
Guitars have to be the most abandoned instruments of all time. There are millions of guitars in the closet sitting there right now collecting dust, quietly weeping, just like... What do you mean? Of course someone's
I think the cowardly lion played the guitar?
Yeah.
Can we get a little bit of the cowardly lion?
He probably played the ukulele or something. Ukulele or like the banjo. This next song I wrote. It's very sad, it's not going to make me cry. So anyways, that's my cowardly lion.
You don't want to do Over the Rainbow while you're at it?
No.
Not even attempt?
You do. We'll do the Aladdin song, and I'll do the Jasmine part,
yes.
But as the Cowardly Lion.
Oh, yeah. I don't even remember the song.
Oh,
now,
you remember it. Come on.
Mitch is like, Mitch is waiting for Mitch, it.
The Don King of podcasts.
I really actually
podcast.
Want to
huh?
hear this.
You could do it. You could do it.
If I get tape of Bilal from Showman Shane Murphy singing the Aladdin song, I can sell this.
Yeah, it's going on. It's going on TSN 690 next week. But I had a similar experience discovering 78s and vinyls in a closet as well, not an instrument, but it was like, why have you buried the music that you grew up with,
mm-hmm.
or when you were younger listened to, like what happened to your life that you would chuck these? And there were some great, like Tony Bennett and Jerry Vale, all the great vocalists, Sinatra.
78s, you have 78s of those? Please tell me you 70, kept them.
No, I don't have, no. No, the 78s were useless. They were wrapped up, it was like wrapping up vintage hockey cards in an elastic band and throwing them in a closet and then years later going back. It was so brittle and dusty.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, they dry out, I guess.
It was sad, actually. And they had a bunch of comedy albums. That was a big thing back in the late 50s, early 60s, some comedy, Red Fox, like really racy stuff for the time. And I grabbed everything I could. But no instrument. There was absolutely no instrument in my house growing up. But it's weird how did you discover anything in your parents' closet, like maybe a gun or something that you went, holy shit.
Oh, the guns were early. The guns were early on. No, my dad explained that to me early on. He said, listen, they're loaded. Don't play with these. That's how we lost your older brother. But I'm just kidding. That's a bad joke. We're going to get some letters.
From Mick.
Nothing. Yeah.
Second letter.
Do you ever go through your parents' drawers or closets without them knowing?
Not that I remember, no.
Come on. Everybody must have done that.
No.
They never left you alone when you were old enough to be left alone at the time, and you.
My mom was a housewife, so she was always home. So I remember when I was three, I used to pee behind the chair when she wasn't looking.
Like a cat.
Yeah, and I did it like three or four times, and then one time she fell, and I was like, because I was too lazy to go to the bathroom. I swear to God, I remember like I have a distinct memory of like, you know, when they have the Parliament on at early in the morning, they'd have like the House of Commons. I remember Pierre Elliott Trudeau, and I remember needing to pee. And she caught me. And she said, "Don't! What are you doing? Don't do that." And I was like, "I'm sorry," but I kind of knew that I shouldn't have done it.
And people are doing it now to Justin.
Doing what?
They're peeing all over Justin Trudeau,
just
all over the country.
R. Kelly,
huh?
Oh. I'm sharing a funny little childhood memory, and you guys get political and you get racy.
So let me bring it back to the Stones. They're on tour. They're going to be touring in the summer, and there's only one Canadian date. It's Canada Day weekend up in near Barrie.
Murrells Creek.
Yeah, do you know this place?
Never heard of it until now.
Yeah.
Where? But apparently that's where they had the SARS concert.
Where's it supposed to be?
Oh, the same place?
I think
well,
so,
that's
yeah.
why AC/DC had a big night, right?
Yeah.
That night.
There were quite a few Stones were there, too.
Yeah.
It just north, like in 130 kilometers north of Toronto.
Burrells Creek?
Burrells Creek, cottage country.
Yeah, Muskoka.
Seeing a lot of people rolling up in their yachts over there.
Exactly. Yeah.
We're here to see the Stones.
This just in from CNS News.
Tony Colgan is here, and he is correcting Bilal. That's one correction.
CNS News with Tony Colgan. Well, the SARS concert was actually over at the downtown airport. Now back to you, Bob.
I was going to go, but I was too scared.
Here's
too many
a song
people.
By a promising new kid named Buddy Holly.
Oh, man.
Yeah, sorry about that. I didn't get to go to the SARS concert. I thought about it, but then I realized, hey, there's an outbreak in Toronto right now, and there's going to be like 500,000 people standing next to each other.
Yeah.
Chances are I might get SARS if I go.
I'm going to the Ebola telethon. Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm not going to go. I take it back. Will you call it?
You okay? Do you have any, seriously, as musicians especially, do you have any... issue or reticence about seeing the Stones at their respective ages?
You know, if I could
still
go see
doing
the
it.
Stones?
Yeah. Well, no, about just the fact that, you know, Charlie Watts is pushing 80. Keith is, the last tour that I saw at the Bell Center, I thought Mick Taylor played better than Keith did.
Mick Taylor?
And, yeah.
Mick Taylor was playing?
Yeah. It was the 50th anniversary tour. He brought him on for four songs,
okay,
including Midnight Rambler. It was fun to see him. But
and playing better than Keith.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he didn't look... Keith didn't seem...
Well Keith kind
Keith,
of...
In Keith's yeah. defense, you're up there for 3 hours, right?
I love Keith Richards.
I'm
what am I wearing?
Don't.
What am I wearing?
I'm not saying that you don't, but you're saying Mick Taylor came out and busted a nut for four songs. So all I'm saying is it's easy to come up, and if someone, it's like if someone invites you up on stage, or you invite someone up on stage, right? Guy sitting there, you know he's a musician, he wants to jump on stage, you've been playing for 2 hours. So the crowd's bored of you, right? And now the guy gets up and he jumps around for a song and then he gets off and he looks like a champ. So Mick Taylor's backstage and all he has to do is come up for four songs and then go back and sit down again.
So you're saying Mitch was duped into thinking Mick Taylor
no,
is
but I'm
a
just
better
saying
guitarist.
If you're up there for...
No, I don't... That night he was better. Mm. And if Keith had been on, I wouldn't have remembered Mick Taylor necessarily, as opposed to the whole concert. That's all I'm saying.
I got a little.
So I was just, I was disappointed. I love the, you know how much I love the Stones. I was
but
just
you got
disappointed.
A point, Shane, I think you're like, and also Mick would probably have been practicing those four songs religiously for a while.
And he, I mean, nailed people it. Would argue with me, but Mick Taylor is a more proficient. Guitar, a more technically proficient guitar player than Keith Richards.
Oh yeah, Keith is very loose playing and. Already when he was younger, but now, have you seen his fingers?
Yeah.
There's no way those fingers can move.
It's amazing that he can play.
The way you have to move. I don't know how he does it, but he has so much fun doing it. That yeah. I think that's what, to me, that's what still makes it fun to watch these guys at their age is that they look like they're having the time of their lives during every song.
Right.
They have that same energy fire on stage that they did when they were younger.
And they kept it together.
Yeah.
Mick Jagger... To answer your question, I wouldn't feel bad. You feel bad when you see acts when guys have like let the
yeah,
shit
like
go.
Yeah, like B.B. King, the last time he played.
Well, B.B. King's different. B.B. King was always sort of heavy set, and he'd been battling diabetes for a long time. I'm saying if you have like the cocaine and all you can eat buffet diet, and then you like blow up and you're like out of shape and you can't pull it off physically, that's when things are dicey. Or if you take, you know, 25 years off and then you need to make money, so then you're doing the reunion tour or whatever, that's different. But they never really stopped touring. I mean, what was the biggest window, like 5 years, six yeah. years, or doing something?
There was always the understanding that no matter how long they weren't going to play, they were going to play.
But again, Mick Jagger always put in the work. Mick Jagger, we just looked at it the other day, is 75 now, right?
Yeah.
That guy's in tremendous
yeah.
shape.
Oh, yeah.
You see, like, Facebook video of him, like, working out with his choreographer. It's like, he doesn't have to do that.
Yeah, he's
all
a
he
fiend.
To, all he has to do is, like, the little dippy hippie.
But what else is he going to do, though?
I agree, but...
That,
a
see,
lot
the of, way I see it is, like, every musician slash performer should be putting that much effort into their live shows. If they did, they would probably maybe not be as big as the Stones, but they would get a lot closer. But it's like, you know, I mean, if you're... Sure, okay, if you have family, but at the same time, a lot of people have families and they got to go to work.
I think it's hard to keep up that pace, and I think a lot of people don't have what it takes to keep up that pace. I think Keith Richards is a genetic freak, and I'm not trying to be flippant, but you know, he partied and he was, you know, talked about his use of alcohol and his use of drugs and all that stuff. But even so, that takes a toll on the average body, which it has not taken the same toll on Keith Richards. And he's still able to play. And if you had shit nights where he's messed up and whatever, everybody's been there. But to be that consistent for that long, I mean, Ron Wood's a tremendous guitar player. Daryl Jones is not the original bass player, but he's been in the Stones since 92.
So he's been that long since Bill Wyman left.
92, yep. Yeah.
Wow.
And Charlie Watts. So I wouldn't have any problem. Yeah. I think it's amazing. I think it's inspiring, and I think it's that's the way.
Well, that's the word for me. That's why all these older musicians.
Jeff Beck.
Like Jeff Beck, oh, looks yeah. like cares how old they are. If
he
they
looks
can
like
still
a yoga
play.
Instructor.
Yeah. I don't have an issue seeing the Stones at their age now. I just have an issue with the ticket price.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That, to me, is like, okay, definitely, when you're still performing at that level in your 70s, and like you were saying, Charlie Watts is in close to 80 now?
He's 80. He's got to be late 70s.
So, I mean, if you're putting that effort, yeah, you deserve, like, people should pay a premium for that, but that much of a premium, I don't know.
What's the most you've ever paid for a ticket for any show? Do you know?
I can't recall right now. Probably about 100 and...
Are there shows
I would have gone up to is 150 maybe, but
are there shows now? People are listening, going, "Wait a minute, Bilal's the drive home guy at Shome. Come on, he doesn't pay for his concert tickets."
Sometimes he does.
Chum.
It's not like the glory days of radio anymore. It's even better.
Bilal comes in. He comes in with stacks of vinyl under his arm. I'm going to play this. I'm going to play this. I'm going to play this. How does that work?
I honestly do, actually. I
how does that work? How much, on a percentage, can you actually say, I'm going to play this. It fits. I'm not going to get grief for it. People are going to like it. I'm going to play it.
I'm not getting into that.
Sidestep.
Well, no, I mean.
House of Cards, baby. That shit was a sidestep. Step to the left. I ain't getting into that.
Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough. Don't answer, Bilal, if you don't feel comfortable.
Okay.
Don't do it.
No, mm-hmm. I mean, I think you know as well as most people, but some don't, that it's been decades now that radio stations have music directors. And there's a lot of research and a lot of factors considered, and music directors curate the playlist. That's their specialty. And then we come in and play the playlist and host the show and build our, you know, topics and whatnot around who we are and around the music we're playing and the local topics in town. But in terms of the only person that really that I know of had carte blanche with the music was Too Tall,
mm-hmm.
because he's just that good that they didn't have to worry about him playing, you know, bust a move all of a sudden, just because he felt like it was the right time to play.
Flea was on bass, so it's like.
You know what's funny, though, is we once had, I'm not going to name any names, but we once had a producer or operator working overnight, and it was New Year's Eve at midnight, and somebody dared him via text message or Facebook, I don't know what, dared him to play You Can't Touch This on Shome.
Oh, boy.
At midnight. And he took the dare.
And what happened?
He lost his job.
Straight up.
But he thought nobody would. He's like, they're like, come on, man. It's midnight, New Year's Eve. There's no way your bosses are listening. But, I mean,
somebody's going to complain.
Someone's going to, you know, write in about that.
Hammer time.
You can't touch this.
My God.
You know. What's happened to Shome?
But in terms of...
You know what I heard on Shome?
Beard rock and roll.
Do we have the freedom to play a song if we feel like that this song's going to fit great in the mix right now, or it's just like there's a reason and there's, you know, that, yeah, we can make that decision. What if you're asking me the percentage of like how often I do that, it depends. Because it depends on, you know, again, I want the song to have an impact if I'm going to play it. So... I'm not just going to say, oh, I feel like hearing this right now. Well, but what does everyone else want to hear? Does that make sense for them, for the listeners?
So. I have one complaint about Shome. I love you guys. You know that. I have one complaint. There's no Shane Murphy.
Oh, man. I was
He's dragging like,
He has one complaint. About, I was like, oh, okay, I know he's going to say now. Please don't say it. And you just said it. Okay.
Oh, Mitchell. Well, a couple of podcasts ago, you asked if I had any pull.
You're giving me phlebitis. Yeah. I wanted to be a dentist. I never had the pull.
Was that a joke?
That's my dad tells me that joke.
That's you know what that is?
And then he goes,
Borscht Belt caliber humor, right?
Born free. My father was a doctor.
What's the Borscht Belt? Pennsylvania? The
Borscht Belt is the Catskills, and that's where they had the... They had the Jewish, a lot of New Yorkers went up to the Catskills for the summer.
Right.
Yeah, so that would be in the Adirondacks, right? Well, mm-hmm. Not far from, well, Woodstock, that whole area, Bethel, mm-hmm. Bethel Woods. Have you been there to any outdoor shows since they became an amphitheater?
I have not been there, no.
It's really cool. It's the actual site, and they fixed it up, and there's an amphitheater for about 15,000 people. But that whole area, it's very Jewish, and a lot of ultra Orthodox Jews are on that lake, but that's the history of that. It died a while ago. That whole Dirty Dancing, right?
Yeah,
that's where that was, the location.
Buddy Hackett, yeah.
And there was a circuit.
Buddy Hackett,
yeah. All the comedians. You said Jackie Mason before.
Apprenticeship with Diddy Kravitz. No, that was the Laurentians.
That's the Laurentians.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. So that's the Borscht Belt. There was a circuit during the summer that you were active and you had dinner and there was a comedian and there was an impressionist and there was a lounge singer, and that was the nightly entertainment all summer in July and August.
Wow.
And there were some big-name comedians who played there. The Borscht Belt. Lenny Buddy Bruce Hackett, when he was younger.
Jackie Mason
was
there.
Yeah, I think that's about it.
Let's bring it back.
Billy Ball Productions presents the return of the Borscht Belt.
We'll,
of
get,
the
a
Borscht
Belt,
we'll
get a mime.
Starring Kevin Hart.
Starring, we'll get your brother. We'll get your brother, right? Bilal's brother is an accomplished comedian. He's out in L.A., right? He actually
he is
moved.
In L.A. Yeah, right. He was just in town to do a couple fundraisers this weekend, actually. And he went over to Moncton for the Hubcap Comedy Festival to perform at Tommy Chong's gala.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. He was one of the slots in Tommy Chong's gala, which was pretty cool. So he had a great time, and now he's gone back to L.A.
So that's a big move. Is he enjoying it out there?
He is, yeah. He's in a tiny apartment with his wife right now that still, you know, it's funny because it's like it's one room, but if you look out the kitchen window, you could see the Hollywood sign, and that's all you need.
That's all. You know where you are.
That's all you need. But it's good.
Feels
it's good.
Like a little movie scene.
Inspiration, pretty much. You know, you're like, I'm here. You wake up every day, and you're like, okay, let's get to work. But he's been working hard, mostly networking, and because it's L.A., right? Everyone's there to make it. So anytime you run into somebody that is a player in town, whether it's a producer or a club owner or whatever it is, the first thing they're, oh, hey, man, like, I'm here from Minnesota, and, like, can I get a spot at your comedy club? So he's not that guy. He's pretty smart the way he's been doing it, and that's to not just all of a sudden approach everyone you meet as like, hey, can you get me a gig, or hey, can you get me an opening slot here? And it's just more about forging relationships and getting to know people, like he did at the Comedy Store, which is the big comedy club there where Seinfeld and Leno and a lot of those guys got started.
Have you watched that series about that? It's based on
Seinfeld show with Comedians of Coffee.
No, on it's based on the Mitzi is her name.
Mitzi Shore?
Yeah.
Pauly Shore's mom.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. No, store. I haven't. I've heard of that,
and
but I haven't
and it's,
seen
it's,
it. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're into comedy, stand up comedy. So Bilal's brother's Abdul, and I'm sure there are a lot of people listening who know him, but in case you weren't aware of who we're talking about, and say hi for us, because he's
do.
A talented guy. He's definitely.
Keep up with him, I think, abdulbutt.com. You could. You'll find out when the next shows are in town here.
You've been to L.A.?
Never.
Never been to L.A.?
No, I've been to California once. I went for a wedding. I went to San Jose.
Was it posh?
Do you know the way to San Jose? See what I did there?
I see what you did.
Los Gatos and San Francisco. And I said, man, if I ever win the lottery, I'd love to. And I heard L.A. is great. I'd love to go to L.A. But I did all the bad, like the Rice-A-Roni, the bad tourist.
Lombard Street.
Lombard Street and what are those streetcars? Trolley, street trolleys?
Streetcars.
Streetcars or trolleys.
Yeah. It was just like such a cool city, and it was August, and it was like super hot in San Jose, and we went to San Francisco, and it was just like Pier 39, and like all the tourist crap that you could do, and I didn't care. I was like, this is a cool
so town. Picturesque. Everywhere you look is just gorgeous.
It was just, like, I fell in love with it.
Yeah, me too.
Right away.
I've been trying to get back since 81 when I was there.
And LA, I hear nothing but good things. I know people like trash LA all the time. They're like, whatever. It's like, well, sounds pretty kind of pretty cool to me, you know? And people can bitch whatever about it, but
Amoeba Music, you know? Amoeba Music is one of the last of the old school record stores where they have live performances and you can find anything. And it's on three floors. It's just gigantic. If you're a music fan, it's a must stop. It's right on the Strip. Sunset Strip, Whiskey a Go-Go.
We should go.
Let's
Road
go.
Trip.
I've never been.
Road trip.
You've never been to LA?
No.
You haven't been to visit your brother? Oh, there's no
Not
room.
Yet. No.
There's no room.
Actually,
Had a brother, I wouldn't care. I'd be on the couch. I'd be in the kitchen.
The invite's there. My parents have gone. I think there's a little air mattress set up in the kitchen kind of deal.
Dude.
So
I would be gone like Donkey Kong, February, man.
So if you paid maybe $100, $150 is the most you ever spend for a ticket for a concert. When people run into you, they must ask you this. What's your greatest show?
Oh, man.
Because you go to so many, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're out there. You're active on social media. You seem to be out at shows, especially when the weather's better, almost every night.
In the summertime, when there's a lot of shows going on, and, yeah, the weather is not an issue with, you know, finding parking or just getting around, I could bike to a show and no problems. But almost maybe, I'd say, four nights a week, especially in the summer because it's festival season. So you got from, you know, obviously the big weekend festivals, Oceaga and heavy in that, but just the other stuff during the week, the Pop Montreals and the M for Montreal, and like I often refer to Montreal on my show as Festival City, because it is, even now, like we're in the Highlights Festival right now at Marielle La Lumiere. It's like every week there's a new festival starting, and when one finishes, the other one picks up. So I go to a lot of live shows, so it's hard to really pick and nail one down. But
top three random off the top of your head.
Well, I'll give you the top one that, like, in my memory is probably the best show I saw was B.B. King live at the Bell Center. I can't remember the year, but it probably would have been around 2002, 2003, something like that. I think I was in college, and it was one of my friends who was the guitarist in my high school band, you might know, John Woo, and his dad, Glenn, was a longtime stage director at Place des Arts, and then moved to the Bell Center and was running, you know, stage setups for a lot of shows there before retiring. They lived up the road on Dr. Penfield and Mountain.
That's where
I was at. Oh yeah,
I lived there. 1515 Penfield, white building.
I think that might have been
late '80s though. That was late '80s. Steeler's wheel, Steel Wheels tour.
Oh yeah. So we were just. And you know, I was at his place, noodling around on the guitar. We're working on songs, and his dad called on the phone and says, "What are you guys doing?" He's like, "Belowzer, right?" Like, yeah. He's like, "B.B. King's in town tonight. You guys come down to the Bell Center garage door and call me from there, and I'm going to open the door and sneak you in." Because he knew we were huge fans. John was a big blues guitarist, you know, and B.B. was one of his top guys. Same with me. Like, probably B.B. King and Eric Clapton combined were the two that made me want to pick up a guitar and learn how to play. And I still am not even close to being as good as one of them playing with half of one hand. But just to say that he was a huge inspiration, and seeing him live. So we walked in through the Bell Center garage and through the bowels of the building, which we had never seen. Well, he might have, because his dad worked there, but I hadn't. And he walked us right up to the soundboard, introduce us to the sound man, who I can't recall his name now, and said, "You look after my boy and his friend. They're going to hang out with you for the show." And we're like, "Are you serious? Like, we're standing at the soundboard right now for B.B. King?" He was just about to come on stage. And when he came out, it was just, it was like seeing some sort of religious figure. Like, it was just, there was a presence about him. And being so inspired by his music too, I think had a huge effect on me. But that was one of the best shows I'd seen. I was, you know, not only did we get in for free, but we're standing right at the soundboard. We're watching BB King at the Bell Center. I never thought I would have seen him live in my lifetime.
Crazy. Yeah, I mentioned before seeing him at the end, which is unfortunate, but I saw him. He's so brilliant. And it's just a sound. Maybe you can.
Great singer.
Well, there's a tone.
Tremendous sound, yeah.
And his that vibrato he does with his index finger.
Yep.
I've spent hours on my guitar neck trying to make my hand. Like, it's almost like, I mean, I'm not saying this in a bad way, but like a shaking kind of like a, some of my family has Parkinson's, it's kind of like that, you know? But he does it on command, and it's the way he moves his hand, it just that I can't do it. I don't know anyone else that can do it that I've seen play live before. Some people can come close, but yeah, his singing too. I think a lot of people talk about B.B. King's guitar playing, but his singing is out of this world. Like his voice, like I said, that presence, it just, as soon as he hits the mic, you're like, whoa.
Live at the Regal. Away. If you never got a chance to.
Live at Cook County Jail.
Oh, that's another one. Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody loves me but my mama, but she could be driving too. Hey, come on. Come on. You got like that.
He was a bad mofo, man.
Yep.
BB. So Buddy King. Guy. Buddy Mitch? Guy was a good one too.
Yeah. Very cool.
I saw them together during the Jazz Fest at the Bell Center.
Oh, nice.
And but the last time, he shouldn't have been on tour. He obviously had a lot of money issues. He had mm-hmm. family, and but that was just sad.
Yeah,
and people were walking out. And
blues guys.
Plus, he was touring like 300 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you're like a shark. What is he going to do? Money. He's going to go back. Yeah, but okay.
What?
But at the same time, you're like, it's all you've ever done for the last 50 years. And then someone's like, well, you don't want to go back to the retirement home and play pinochle?
King. To see Gary Clark and B.B. King was not a cheap ticket.
Muhammad Ali, his last fight, should he have taken them?
Of course not.
But why did he?
Well,
because you can't say no to the champ. So what are you going to tell B.B. King? You're B.B. King. You're not going to go. It's not like he's getting punched in the head.
I get why he was there. It's just sad.
You want to go out with your boots on.
I wouldn't.
Mike Keith.
I just wouldn't have. I wouldn't have booked him. I'd like to believe I wouldn't have booked him.
It's greedy people out there, and you know, he wanted to do it, and you know, the body couldn't. But
I, like I said, I remember the six times that I did see him when he was in his 60s and 70s, and even into his early 80s, like 81, 82, he was still okay. He was starting to slip noticeably. But he still sounded fine and he played fine. But then the last time he was 84, 85, that was a sad sight. But anyway.
I kind of saw that one coming. That's why I didn't go to that show. I was like, I don't know about this one.
Well, I wanted to leave after Gary Clark because I had heard what was going on with him, B.B. Mm-hmm. King. And Allison had never seen B.B. King. I said, it's not going to be good. People are going to leave. That's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You?
When you took me to see Prince, he called me up like,
wow.
I think it was the same day. No, the day before.
Yeah, no, it was the same day. It was a last minute thing. Ruben Fogel.
Which show was that?
Right before he died.
Right before
he died. The piano microphone one.
Just by himself with a piano and a microphone. And I thought it was going to be, he was having hip, obviously now we know now, he's having hip issues. He had it walked out with a cane.
Wow.
But he was like spinning the cane and he walked around the piano like three times. And I was like, okay, this is going to be cool. Like, it's going to be fine. He's Prince, whatever. He's going to do like some ballads, whatever. And then, like, the first half an hour was just him like doing songs from his catalog I'd never heard. And then he'd just do like instrumental jazz piece. And then he's like Art Tatum and all this like crazy stuff. And then he started getting to boogie woogie, like, Dr. John versions of his songs, and I'm like, I know that song, and I'm like, oh my god, and then it just started to take off, and then the encore was, he didn't play, there was no drums, obviously, but he had a sequencer on his piano that you can see, and then he started hitting so it's like third encore, and he just taps like the top of the piano, and now he hears, and then he starts playing the line to When Doves Cry. and people shit their pants. Like, wow. The lights went on, everybody stood up, and he had, throughout the show, he'd been turning the lights on and be like, everybody stand up, I want to see, turn the lights on. So he turned the house lights on, so he's like, got this Pavlovian thing going on, so whenever the lights come on, people just stand up. And so he hit the line of windows, crying, the lights went on, and people just lost their minds. And I remember standing there with my hands on my head and my mouth was open. That one guy could, like, do that with a piano. And there's, like, how many people were in the show? 3,000 people?
Oh, it was sold out Place des Arts. What's
the big
close
one?
To, I think it's 2,800.
Man, I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
Never seen anything like that.
Did you get any sense seeing him that night that something was different or up?
Not
him?
A chance.
Well, I mean, besides the cane kind of thing?
Then to find out that he, you know, after...
The cane looked like it was for show.
And he was doing...
Oh, yeah, okay.
And then he was going out and DJing all night.
Yeah, it's true.
On that tour.
It's true, he did that.
And
he was supposed to do an after show at Music.
He did. He showed up, like, really late.
Yeah, very late, I heard.
Well, yeah.
Like, after 2 a.m. or
didn't
something.
Didn't I tell you about it? And you...
Yeah, yeah.
But it was too late for you, I guess. Like, I think by 4 he still hadn't done anything. But then he walked in at 5 or something.
For me. Playing the old man card.
Playing the old man card.
Well, I guess it must have been too late for you, Shane, who plays till 4 a.m. at bar.
I had to pick up my Ovaltine.
Well, let's hear something from that tour. You got something for us?
Tone. Yeah, Tony's with the boys. Yo, Tony! You got the Prince song?
CNS News.
Mary, Don't You Moan? This is from the album, I think it's one. It's called One Microphone and a Piano. Anyways, he's a freak, and I love him, and I miss him. And yeah, he blew my mind.
Genius.
No, Mary, don't you weep. No winter, no cold, but a
world. Yeah. I got a bad, bad feeling that your man ain't coming home. Yeah. Oh, mother. Yeah. You cook the greatest omelets in the world. Mary, Mary, don't you moan, yeah. I got that bad, bad feeling. Your man ain't coming home, yeah. Oh, 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 oh. Mother, don't you moan.
Wow,
what a cut.
Yeah, it's an old gospel song that I'd never heard before, and I think Aretha Franklin does a version, and the Staples do over. Anyways, it's an old gospel song.
Oh, the Staples.
And he's just like. So I was digging around.
Take me to
church. And, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you to Ruben Fogel again for.
Oh my God.
For inviting me in. And man, it was less than a week, and he was dead.
I almost bought a ticket for that one actually, because I couldn't get one, and I was like, I think I'm going to buy a ticket, and then it was sold out.
He's 57. He looked like he was 30.
Yeah, it's just, what's the word? Lithe. Is that the word on stage?
Live, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like a cat.
It's like, yeah, or, yeah, cat, in
shape,
feather.
In shape.
Yeah.
57.
Well, that's...
And, like, keeping his shit together, working out on top of his game. And, obviously, he had a bad hip problem in that he was, I think he was opioids or some, I mean...
Painkillers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Finishing up the Melnick and Murphy podcast, Mitch Melnick, Shane Murphy, Bilal Butt of Shome. Who is the person over the years? And by the way, we're recording this, and we're going to go out with a little salute to Kurt Cobain on, what's the date today? February
20th.
February 20th. Kurt Cobain would have been 57 today.
52.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
52.
Get your rock right, Mitch.
Well, I've got the Trues and the Motor League in my head. I love the Trues.
Nice.
And you guys just hosted them last night in the Shome Rock Room. You've had a lot of...
I have a true story.
Is it a true story?
It's a true, true story. I was working with Gordy Johnson. He was producing some of my stuff. And
the Texas Sessions.
Yeah. He calls me and he goes, what are you doing today? And I go, nothing. And I was going out with Aaron at the time, and I just come back from Tim Hortons. It was a Sunday afternoon around 2. So I said, I'll get us a couple of coffees, driving back. Gordy calls me, he goes, what are you doing tonight? I don't know, I'm just chilling with my girlfriend. He goes, I need you to go play bass for the Trues, the Ottawa Blues Festival. I said, what? And something happened with the bass player, appendicitis or something, and he couldn't do the show. And I said, Gordy, you fucking with me, man? Come on. He's like, no, I missed my flight from Calgary. I can't do it, because he knew all the bass parts, because he produced a bunch of their albums. And we're close friends with them. I think they wrote Highway to Heroes together. Mm-hmm. You just posted that, right?
Yeah, I did.
And so he said, and I was like, there's no bass player in Ottawa. And he's like, I've called all my boys. I'm like, I'm not the first guy you called to play. He's like, no. I'm like, where am I at? He's like, you're probably the sixth guy I've called. I'm like, okay. And he sent me like 15 songs, and we played the main stage, two main stages.
You did it, yeah?
Well, he's like, they're going to have to cancel the show. So he sent me 15 songs, and... So I'm like, so Aaron drove. We were in my Buick Century. I had one of those little pig nose amps.
I had my guitar, and I was figuring out the songs on guitar first, and learned poorly 15 songs and showed up, and it was like 35 degrees. It was super hot.
Wow.
And we got up and played in front of like 15,000 people, like an hour and 15 minute show.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
How'd you feel?
That was stressed. Stressed. Yeah. I did a lot of these.
No kidding.
Wee, you know when bass players do that? Wee. Like when you don't know the note, you just go wee, wee, like you're really into it. Pew, pew.
People love that.
And yeah, I don't know if the band liked it, but.
Well, they had no choice.
But who's John Angus?
John Angus is the lead guitarist.
Yeah, so he faced me, and I stood behind, like, so he was front stage, and I was, like, beside the drummer, and I was watching his hands. And I did an hour and 15 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. And they were like,
the mark of a
were they
real,
cool with you?
Of a real professional.
Well, they were stressed. They were very stressed out.
Yeah, because
it was a, you know, so they never know who this.
Yeah. Did they even know who you were?
No idea.
Yeah.
And I'd played with, the keyboard player Jeff Heischholt in Toronto. So
he's part of Tommy Youngstein most of the time.
Yeah. So he knew me from that. So I think he told them like, okay, this guy's not a complete crackhead. He'll pull it off. But they were stressed. So they were as cool as they could be with. You know, they had other things on the other ends. Yeah, so that, but you know, we got through it, and like I said, a lot of
good story.
Pew, pew, pew.
So a lot of Star Wars.
Thanks, Bilal.
Pew pew.
Good story. That's my true story.
So over the years, you've been able to hang out down there in that little intimate room with some of the best musicians in the country, right?
Yeah, it's been pretty fun so far. Actually, there's been some really, and it's very because it's a little room, and it's not. One of those, you know, it's not like a venue that people, there's a, you know, a lot more people. I think we're maybe 100 in there. So, and it's closed circuit, so to speak, you know, like you can't buy tickets. You have to win your way in. And we treat the bands pretty nicely, too. So they all, the thing we hear the most is like, wow, thanks for, you know, accommodating us. We've played some big venues that, you know, backstage doesn't even have, you know, maybe a couple of crackers and a few beers, but... You know, we'll bring them whatever food they want and, you know, give them even show them shirts. And
what was the group from Kingston that was in a few months back?
Glorious Sons.
Glorious Sons, yes. And I, the only reason I know this is because Kirk Muller.
Yeah, you brought Kirk.
I mentioned to Kirk that I think that they're from Kingston. I think you know these dudes. And he said, really? And he rushed over.
What's the singles? The Sawed-Off Shotgun?
That's their latest one, yeah.
That's a good song. That's a really good song. And I got to meet them upstairs. They had them in the sales room upstairs, and they had a platter of food and wine, and Muller was cutting up with them the whole time. It was great.
That night, I'll always remember because I didn't know Kirk was there until I literally turned around at some point, and you were standing right behind me with him, and I didn't even know you were there because you'd come in, I guess I didn't see you at the beginning, and you both were standing there. I don't know if you heard this or not, but at some point, a couple songs later, when the song ended, and this woman next to me nudges her husband like, look who it is behind you. And the guy turns around. He's like, oh, my God. I can't believe. Honey, get the phone. You got to take a picture. I'm a huge fan, man. Oh, my God, honey. It's Shane Corson. Come on. And Kirk just like.
Kirk looked at him. He must have been laughing his ass off.
Yeah. He looked at him. He's like, I'm not Shane Corson, but it's okay. And he's like, oh. Well, you look like him. I was like, at that point, don't you recover by going, I'm so sorry. Like, you played for the Canadians, right? Oh, yeah. Oh, Kirk Muller, I'm sorry. You know, but no, the guy, like, no remorse. He's just like, oh, well, you look like him. And he's like, can I get a picture anyway? And I was like, do you even know who you're taking a picture with? It was a good one. But Kirk played it off like, you know.
So like are you going to follow up your opening slot for Youngstein, because it really was dynamic. Are you going to do something? Are you going to record something? Are you going to play some shows? Or
I stopped playing shows for a bit just so that I can have some time to write and record some new music. So that's what I'm doing now. I've pretty much done with the writing and now starting the demo and pre-prod and stuff up at the cottage and laying down some tracks and see how it sounds. And hopefully by this, I'm being optimistic by saying this summer, but maybe by the fall, I'll have a new album out.
You got a nice place up there. I haven't been. I've been invited.
It's cozy.
Thank you very much. But can you blast it?
Oh, crank it? I've got, I had over the years, you know, kept my eye on Kijiji and whatever eBay to pick up a stereo system of my liking. So I have a very nice vintage Marantz amp receiver with a dual turntable and from the 70s, and a pair of Ditton speakers, Celestion 65s, and I think something like that. I can't remember the exact model now, but I'd once come across an audio forum, and it was like, if you want one pair of great speakers for your vintage stereo set, get these. And so I found them finally in pretty good condition on Kijiji and bought them a few years ago. So I have that there, and I bring my records up and just like sometimes play the drums along to stuff or whatever. I've got a little setup there. So.
Turn it to 11.
Actually, I watched Spinal Tap last weekend when I was there.
Don't even look at it.
Are you any closer to
new music? New Mew?
Well, new music shake, that won't get played on show?
If you shake. He loves making it awkward. I think I have some songs that will be end up being played on show. Thank you very much.
I hope so.
Yeah. And, yeah, working right now on it. So. Yeah, I'm in studio.
We did play...
Chipping away.
Well, I did. When you put out Street Money Miracle, which is approaching its 10th anniversary, I think.
Yes, it's 10 years this year.
What are we going to do for
October.
That?
October.
He's planning something.
That's it's in the works.
Yeah, we're planning something. Billy Bob Productions.
It's in the works.
Is planning.
Oh, of course Mitch is going to take all your money. Wonderful.
Hey, thanks for...
Mitch gives me money.
Thanks.
And takes me to concerts.
And Moishes.
And steaks.
You didn't even let me finish. I was...
Okay, well, just... Yeah, we're
concert and steaks.
But I only had the salmon tartare, so I took it easy.
Bilal Butt of Shom. How many years?
15.
15 years?
Yeah, nobody. Holy everyone thinks shit. I've been there for 2 years. I don't know why.
15 years. Good yeah. for you. No, I know. I know what that is.
I started on overnight, so yeah, if you're a day person, you wouldn't have heard me for the first five. But yeah, I did disappear for 1 year to Alberta in 2005. I did a rock morning show at a rock station in Fort McMurray.
Gee, how was that?
Would not recommend it. I would not recommend it.
So if you're fortunate, if you're fortunate.
Did you have a pickup truck?
Didn't make enough money to buy a pickup truck.
And a shotgun.
I was the least paid person in, like you think, a morning show host on one of two radio stations in town. Everybody knew me. Everybody. Like, from the mailman to any, like, the pharmacy I walk in, there was only two radio stations and one community TV station. So if you were on any of those, you know, 70,000 people in town, everybody knows you. That's the only thing you could listen to. It wasn't very big streaming and, you know, all that stuff back then. So, you know, people listened to local. And you walk in anywhere. And, you know, when you're at that kind of profile, it was weird for me because here it wasn't like that for me. So... at the time, at least. And then now I walk into a restaurant. Oh, my God, Bilal, hey, come on, man. Come sit down, chat with us, hang out, whatever. Have some drinks. And I'm thinking, I'm the morning guy on radio, so I should be buying people drinks, not these guys working in the oil fields, you know, wearing their, you know, they're all covered in soot and whatever. And I'm like, these guys are buying me shots, like, nonstop. But the thing is, anyone working in the oil industry there, you're starting at $85,000 a year salary. That was in 2005.
Yeah.
The lowest paid job you can get. And literally out of high school, they'd hire you. You just had to not be an idiot and you're in. There were people showing up from Newfoundland, from East Coast, because it was, you know, a lot of lack of jobs then with the fisheries being shut down. And they would walk in and get a job, like drop their CV, get a call the next day, come into work. We need you now or tomorrow, whatever. And a lot of them had to go back home because they couldn't find a place to live. Like, I was there for 10 months. I moved five times. It was ridiculous. You can't sign a year lease there. You have to sign month by month. And they're what they call kind of like house hunters or room hunter that people will knock on doors in a community and say, do you have a room to rent in your house? I was renting a room in a young couple's house. They just had a baby. They're 30-something. They had an extra bedroom upstairs. I rented a room in their house for $800 a month. I had, like, literally the size for a double bed, a little dresser with a, they gave me a little TV and a PlayStation 2, which was
sounds
very
like
nice
your brother's
enough.
Place in LA.
Yeah, it was. It was.
You get a penthouse in NDG for $800.
But it was a beautiful house, like, huge house, hot tub, big screen TV, everything. And they're like, this is your place, man. Like, they're very nice people. They're like, feel at home, cook in the kitchen,
did they have
sit
a
down,
truck?
Watch TV. They had two. And two Ski-Doos and two motorcycles.
So who brought you back?
I came back. Oh, I can't. That's another funny story. But very quickly, there was a guy that used to be the morning man there years ago, and then he had gone off to a bunch of other jobs, St. Catharines, I think Toronto, maybe Calgary, something like that, and decided he wanted to come back home. And his parents, you know, his parents are still there. He just had kids, and so I wanted to move closer to the grandparents. His parents are very connected in town. So it was essentially him knocking on the door going, or his dad making a call, or someone making a call saying, you know, son's back in town. We need you to give him a job on the radio station. Well, he's obviously only going to do mornings because he's at that level. He's been doing, and the guy had a lot of experience. Like, from what I heard, he'd been in the business for 30 years. But, so, you know, my boss calls me and goes, I don't know how to tell you this. I've never had to do this, but he's like, if I don't let you go to give someone else a job, I'm going to lose my job.
I'm going to get let go.
Yeah. So I was really pissed off because this at this point, like I said, I'd moved five times because someone knocked on the door. Was like, well, we'll give you $1,000 a month for that room. And then they come see you and like, can you match $1,000? I'm like, sorry, can't. Like, well, you're going to have to move out at the end of the month. So I moved five times. There was another really insane story around that, but that's for another time. And so, yeah, I had to pick up after moving across the country, you know, getting rid of my life here, bringing everything there or whatever I decided to keep. And then I had to, where am I going to go next? So I couldn't afford to stay there because it was way overpriced and there's just nothing else to do there. I could have gone into the oil industry, which I kind of regret now because I would have been a millionaire by now, but... but no, I don't.
Yeah, but you're doing the drive on Shome.
Yeah, that was a joke, Mitch. Jeez. yeah, no, it was. I decided I'm going to come home. My parents had a butcher shop grocery store that they were running at the time, and I went to be a butcher for a whole year while I was planning my next radio move. And Shome had called me up during the summer, said, you know, people are going on vacation. We need someone to do fill ins. You're in town. Can you work? Sure. And then, as luck would have it, someone left the roster to go to another job, and everyone kind of moved up, and then they're like, oh, we got an opening for you. So I got offered, I first came back part-time, and then I got offered the drive show.
Something to be proud of, 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah, it
is.
Very
cool. So if you're lucky enough to keep going for another 15 and call it a Shome career after 30 years, how many did Too Tall work?
40. Yeah.
The last song
I play? Well, I can't tell you that because there's 15 years of songs that are going to come out that I might fall in love with.
I love that answer.
I love you too, Mitch.
Bilal Butt, Shane Murphy, Mitch Melnick, Tony Colgan, CNS Studios in Western NDG.
West Side.
To thank Lauren Rubin of Paramount Financial Services, 514-905-0885, 514-905-0885. And on Kurt, what would have been Kurt Cobain's 52nd birthday.
Yes.
We're going out with from Unplugged in the Pines. See you next time. Was found.
I will shiver the whole night through.